7BR Part Heard.
Hello, and welcome to 7BR's Part Heard, the podcast that traverses the legal landscape, examining issues across multiple practice areas, guided by the diverse expertise of our members. I'm Rhys Palmer, Chambers Paralegal. We're joined today by 7BR member Mas Ndaun Jai, who is here today to join the pupillage series to talk about life as a recent lateral hire and new junior tenant at 7BR. Mas joined 7BR this September after completing his pupillage at the Government Legal Department. He is the founder and chairperson of Bridging the Bar, a charity which aims to support aspiring barristers from statistically underrepresented groups. He has been shortlisted for Future Leader, Diversity and Inclusion at the Chambers UK Bar Awards, and was the first ever pupil barrister to be awarded Barrister of the Week by The Lawyer. Mas intends to build his practice across a range of Chambers civil practice areas. Mas, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Rhys.
So Mas, thanks for joining us today on this pupillage mini-series. As with all my guests, I like to start at the beginning. So if you could just tell us about sort of your schooling prior to the bar.
Sure. I'll go from the very top. I went to Ifield First School, then the Mill Primary School in my hometown of Crawley. After that, I went to Thomas Bennett Community College, which was another state school in the town where I'm from. And from there, I went on to Queen Mary University of London in East London, where I studied the law LLB for 3 years. So that's the sort of the main part of the journey. Obviously, at some point later on, I ended up going to bar school, but there was lots of stuff that happened before then.
So between Queen Mary's and bar school, were you working at that point?
Yes, I was working at first. And at that point, I wasn't actually pursuing a career at the bar. So I was working as a financial trader, and I worked at a large accountancy firm before that for a little while. So that's how I spent a significant period of time after uni. During university, I was doing a million other things as well. I was working as a football coach. I worked for a Premier League club as well as my local town. So lots of really different stuff, but nothing really legal related.
So it sounds like you've done quite a bit of differing things, football, trading, and accountancy firm, etc. What then made you want to be a lawyer?
Sure. So it goes back to, I suppose, a little bit earlier on in the story. So back in when I was in year 12, I studied law in the sixth form. The reason I actually picked law was because my sister did it. And she was a few years older than me. So I remember getting to school in year seven, and she was in the sixth form at that point already. And so she would come home with her problem questions, and I would sort of look over them, try to figure them out, always get them completely wrong. But it sort of opened my eyes to the law and made me think, not that I wanted to be a lawyer at that point. I was a year seven kid, right? You don't know what you want to do. But what I said to myself was, when I get to the sixth form, that's going to be the first subject which I do pick. And during the time at sixth form, my school, for the first time ever, entered into a competition, which I think is still running today, called the National Bar Mock Trial Competition. And basically, that was a mooting competition. So mock trials, it was in real courts with real judges. And I was fortunately selected to be one of the sixth form's barristers. And I always say at this point, when I went into the courts and did it, I sort of thought to myself, this isn't real work. This is fun. So when I got home, I told my parents, yeah, I think this is what I want to do with my life. Obviously, now I'm actually a barrister. I realize it is real work. but that's sort of where the interest was originally sparked. Why didn't I pursue the career at law was obviously the natural question you'll be thinking at the moment. Essentially, at that point, all of the advice was that I was getting that was that if I wanted to become a barrister, I needed to go to Oxbridge. So my next step was obviously, okay, well, do what you can and get to Oxbridge if you're going to be a barrister. So, you know, I worked really hard in year 12, really, really hard. I got all of the grades that I needed to apply, and I applied to Mansfield College in Oxford. I've already told you I didn't go to Oxford, so you'll know that I didn't get in. I did get interviewed, but unfortunately was not selected. And so at that stage, to me, not getting into Oxford meant that I couldn't become a barrister, or at least that's what I thought. So whilst I still went to university, I still studied law, I still went to Queen Mary, you know, at that point, I wasn't really actively pursuing a career at the bar at all. So I didn't join the Law Society, the Bar Society. I didn't do any legal work experience during my 3 years there. So yeah, that's basically the background. I hope that answers your question.
It definitely does. So you say you didn't do, at the time, whilst at uni, any of the typical things that a student is told to do, mooting, mini pupillages, etc. Did you then, whilst working and deciding that you wanted to be a barrister, then start to engage in those sort of elements of the process?
No, I've got a strange story to the bar. I never ever did a mini pupillage. I think it's a great thing, and I've had mini pupils since I've joined, and I wish I did. But I'd never done a mini pupillage before I'd secured pupillage. I'd never done any mooting before I'd secured pupillage. Essentially, after graduation, as I said, I was doing completely different types of work, and the truth is, I'd given up on a career at the bar. And I received this email from my old sixth form teacher who, you know, he's somebody who I'm still in contact with today. He's somebody who I've got so much respect for. He's somebody that's given me so much advice over the years. And the email was just simply, "Mass, are you practicing as a barrister yet?" And it's funny because he knew I wasn't practicing as a barrister because he'd been my reference for absolutely everything I'd done. But really what he was trying to do was to encourage me and say, this is something you can do. And, you know, the way I always describe him whenever I sort of tell this story is I always describe him as an uncle type figure. And in my culture, I listen to my uncles, I listen to my aunties, I listen to my elders, I take advice from people with wisdom and experience. And, you know, I thought to myself, well, I'll give it a go, tell him I tried. And put an application in. And it was specifically, he said to me, sorry, I missed a little part of the story. He said, when I explained all the reasons I hadn't applied, he said, look, somebody I know has just secured pupillage at the government legal department. I think that they would still value your experiences, even though they're non-legal. Put an application in. And so that's the point where I said to myself, well, why not? I'll give it a go. But the truth is, when I did the application, I didn't expect to get anywhere with it. And then, you know, a little while later, there was an offer for pupillage and I had to figure out what I was going to do with my life. So yeah, that's what sort of turned things around. But it wasn't, I suppose, a really intentional decision. I think had he not emailed me and encouraged me, maybe I would be doing something completely different today.
Well, that's quite a wholesome story. And I think it's quite refreshing to hear, especially for applicants, that it is possible to get pupillage without having done 6-7 minis and having done mooting and won every competition there is, an essay competition. There's, from your story, it seems, just a level of greater, wider experience that you can sort of draw on that's probably made you stand out in an application versus somebody else.
And that's exactly it. I think the advice I always give to people who want to become barristers is figure out what your unique selling point is. Because for someone like me, I wasn't able to compete necessarily with candidates who might have gone to Oxbridge or who might have got a first, which I missed out on by 1%, or candidates who had all of this mini pupillage experience, mooting experience. But in the different experiences that I did have, there was lots of unique experiences in those. And so I suppose the message is, rather than competing on a battleground where you're not going to win, why don't you move to a battleground where you might and focus on your own unique strengths, which other people won't have. And there's lots of different ways where somebody might do that. I always think sometimes by looking back to some of your old passions, pursuing something outside of the law can actually be a positive thing to take into a pupillage interview, because ultimately, as a barrister, you're going to have to work with clients from a range of different backgrounds. And if you can relate to people from different walks of life, then those are experiences which can be beneficial for you. But also, for example, if you're somebody who is interested in business, and that's another interest of yours, well, as a barrister, you're self-employed. So you technically are your own business. So any experience you can get in marketing and, you know, just the ordinary stuff, learning to do taxes and that sort of thing that can be helpful for you, knowing that you'll be able to survive in this sort of environment and hopefully thrive in this sort of environment. So I think sometimes thinking just outside of the box, rather than thinking of just the same experiences which most candidates will have, just think and ask yourself, what else can I say or what else can I do which maybe none of the other applicants will be able to talk about?
So you applied for pupillage and you got it at the GLD. Can you just briefly give us an insight into what that was like, your pupillage there and the years that you were there?
Sure. So pupillage at the GLD, the GLD runs a two-year training program. So although pupillage is completed after 1 year, as a barrister, you do your second year still on the trainee program. And the idea is that there's some consistency with the training offered to solicitors who obviously have training contracts which last 2 years. So at the GLD, what they do is they rotate you every 6 months. And so I spent the first 6 months in a litigation seat working on judicial reviews, lots and lots of judicial reviews. In the second 6 months, I went and I applied to do a secondment elsewhere, and I applied to Blackstone Chambers, where I spent 6 months there. And the idea is, even if you do pupillage at the employed bar, that you still get an experience of what the self-employed bar is like. And then in the second year, so post-pupillage, I spent 6 months in the Cabinet Office and then 6 months in the Department for the Environment, Food and Rural Affairs. So a real broad mix of experience during that 2 years. And it's 2 years I can look back on with a smile.
So you did 2 years and you, as you just said, did a range of things. You've recently moved to 7BR, your most recent lateral hire. You've joined at the same time that our two pupils have been taken on. What encouraged and spurred the move to leave the GLD and come to 7BR?
So it was a really difficult decision to leave the GLD because I had some great memories there and I've made some great friends there. The main reason why I felt that I needed to leave was because practice at the GLD does not provide many advocacy opportunities. And so whilst you're involved in some really great advisory work, often, for example, which is what I was doing in my second year, you're not in court. And for me, I felt that that's something that I wanted to explore and see how I would fare as an advocate being in the courts. So that's something which made 7BR really attractive. You know, this is a place where I can be on my feet in court multiple times a week, pretty much as I can handle. But as well as that, there's also a lot of different types of work that people in this chambers do, which means there's an opportunity to figure out what you love the most, because sometimes you think in theory that an area of law is going to be amazing, and then in practice, it's really not, but vice versa as well. Sometimes you think something's going to be really boring and it turns out to be the most interesting thing you've done before. So that's an opportunity here for me to do all of that. I think the other reason why 7BR was the right place for me was, as I was thinking about my next steps, I had to look at my experience honestly and say to myself, where am I going to be best placed? And although I'm 2 years in, because of the nature of my pupillage, it means that I don't have advocacy experience, except the advocacy experience that I've gone and got myself pro bono, basically. And that was a combination of pupillage and COVID. So ordinarily, I would have done a bit in my second six, but COVID, the lockdown basically prevented that from happening. So what was important to me was that when I was making the move, I could go somewhere where I felt comfortable to knock on people's doors and, you know, ask questions and ask stupid questions and know that I've got colleagues who are going to support me. And as I was going through the process of joining here, I could see that this was the type of place where I'd be able to get that support.
And so you just mentioned going through the process. What was that process and how did you find that experience?
The process was, first, there was a few conversations. You know, while I was just exploring the opportunity and asking questions, and that sort of went both ways. And that was before any sort of formal application was made. And I actually came into chambers beforehand to meet some of the people before I also made an application. And this is what I say, all of these sorts of things gave me confidence that this was the sort of place where I could get the support and have a kind of collegiate, I don't know, vibe in Chambers. And that's what I found. So that was the beginning. And then at the point of making a proper application, obviously it was a CV, a cover letter, plus a few extra bits. And then it was an interview with quite a heavy interview, to be fair. They put me through it a little bit, but still enjoyable. One of those ones where you leave and you're sort of like, ooh, that was quite fun. and then it was just waiting to hear back. So that was the process as a lateral hire. Currently, I know that obviously as a pupil or a mini pupil, there's different processes, but that was the one that applied to me.
And since joining, what has your practice been like? Has there been anything different or interesting that you've done?
When I joined Chambers, the truth is I didn't really have any expectations, not high expectations or not any low expectations, but I've been really pleased with the type of work that I've been able to get involved in. And also, actually, it's also been good to spend some time just with other people in Chambers. And there's been a lot of support from Chambers, who've understood the situation that I'm coming from. And the fact is that this is a really different type of practice to the one I've had before. So, I mean, before I even got on my feet, one member, a senior member of Chambers, was kind enough to do a crash course for me. And I spent a few days in a classroom with him, sort of going through some of the areas of law, which he's a specialist in, and just trying to provide me with some assistance. But I also spent a lot of time just shadowing other members of Chambers, just out of choice, really. And it was really great that they were happy all to have me and spend time talking to me before and afterwards. But yeah, since getting on my feet, there's been a real range of interesting work. I did a 5-day inquest relatively early on. I've done some employment hearings. I've done some PI cases, personal injury cases, that is. I've had a good mix of written work as well and done some written advices. I'm just trying to think now. This is, and as we're speaking, I got on my feet 1 month ago, probably today. So there's been a lot happening. I'm just sort of trying to think about it all now. And there's obviously loads of stuff which isn't coming to mind. Some loads of public law stuff as well, lots of public law work. So yeah, it's been a really broad mix. I think the highlight for me has been, rather than it being a particular case, more the fact that I can see my work here is going to have a real impact on the clients that I represent. You know, I can hear the person who might benefit from my work say thank you. Whereas sometimes I think in the work I've done previously, where it's been really high level and working on national policy, for example, you don't necessarily see the individual who benefits from your work. So yeah, that's been the highlight.
Now, moving slightly to a different subject, moving away from applications joining 7BR, as I introduced you, I said that you were the founder of Bridging the Bar. Could you just sort of tell us a little bit about that, what that is, and sort of what made you start the organization?
Yeah, Bridging the Bar is a charity which is very close to my heart. It's a charity which I love. It's a charity which I set up during pupillage, with the aim of ensuring that those from statistically underrepresented groups at the bar have equal opportunities at the bar. And so, yeah, it's a charity aiming to support aspiring barristers. It originally began as essentially the idea was to launch a mini pupillage program, because we could see that there was lots of initiatives trying to support aspiring barristers from some of the groups that we might support. But there just didn't seem to be anything which was physically getting them in the chambers themselves, getting them the work experience where they can actually see what the job looks like themselves, or might be able to get a little bit of a taster and get some feedback on some work. And so that was the original priority. And now we're fast forward just over a year, and there's 70 chambers signed up to a mini pupillage program. including 7BR, who also have given us some money as a sponsorship partner. There's a UK Supreme Court work experience internship program, which is a paid program. There's been a law commission internship program. There's some other stuff which is in the pipeline, but I'm not able to say yet because, you know, we've got to do the press the press release. So yeah, I think as we've been able to do some really great work in this space, I keep saying we, and that's because to recognize that there is a really strong team supporting all of our efforts. We've got two phenomenal champions in Professor Leslie Thomas QC and Professor Joe Delahunty QC. And we've also got a phenomenal executive committee who are all volunteers, I should say, and working really hard to bring all of this into fruition.
So you yourself set this organization up to help underrepresented groups get access to the bar, initially through Mini Pupillages. And obviously, Bridging Bar is quite well known now. It's really made a name for itself in the last year. But you applied yourself and was able to obtain pupillage without the support of your charity. What was that like? And what words of wisdom would you give to young students who think that the profession isn't accessible on the basis that there aren't people that look like them?
I think the first thing I would want to say, you know, to a younger version of me, or somebody who was aspiring to this profession right now, is don't write yourself off. I gave a talk at a panel at Middle Temple a while back, and one of the other panelists said something really profound, and I now repeat her advice. I need to credit it to her. But she said, don't internalize the external. And what she meant by that is you can look at the statistics and say to yourself, well, this means I'm not going to make it. And that's basically what I did. If you go back to my story as a sixth former, I thought to myself, well, all of these people on websites, Barristers Chambers, this is where they've gone to. This is the institutions they've gone to. I was also being told that elsewhere, but these messages are out there. There's lots of messages which will say to you that you can't make it in this profession. But by focusing on all of that, you're not focusing on yourself. And it goes back to the comment I made earlier. The best thing you can do as an aspiring barrister is to identify your unique selling point. Why will you be an asset to chambers? Why will you be a good barrister? There are a number of ways to demonstrate how you can be a good barrister. Think about the core skills of a barrister. What are those? Oral advocacy. Now, for example, mooting is one way to demonstrate that you might have good oral advocacy skills, but it's not the only way. So if you've not done any mooting like I hadn't, I had to think about other circumstances or other examples I might be able to draw upon in which still demonstrate that I'll be able to speak effectively in court with a little bit of support and training. The same things with written advocacy. And just think about all of the other skills that a barrister needs. So that's where the focus should be. The focus should be on yourself, your unique selling point. And if you can identify that and find effective ways of communicating that in a written application and then an interview, then you've got every chance.
And those words of wisdom that you've just given, is that something that Bridging the Bar now offers to help applicants in their pursuit of the bar?
Well, Bridging the Bar has become what it has, largely because the bar, the wider bar, so more than just our group, you know, for example, the 70 chambers, they've all come together through us to say we will help. On our books, we've got hundreds of barristers, you know, that includes people at the very junior level to QCs, includes judges who have signed up as volunteers, willing to give their time. And often we have sitting practitioners who mark our schemes. We also have practitioners who have signed up to become mentors on our programs or who have given talks at our summer schools. So I think there are a number of objectives that we have. One of them, for example, through our mentoring program, is to be able to help candidates in those circumstances. And on that program, I understand that many of the mentees were able to speak to their mentors about their applications and get some advice on how they could improve on them. So that is definitely something that is on our radar as a way we would like to help the barristers of tomorrow.
And if people wanted to find Bridging Bar, get in contact with you and the people that run the charity, where can they find you?
They can find us at Bridging the Bar, bridgingthebar.org. We are on Instagram and we are on Twitter and we are on LinkedIn and we're on Facebook. We're on absolutely everything. I cannot tell you the ats off heart, but if you're interested, go find us.
Well, thank you, Mass, for joining me today. Is there any final parting words that you'd like to give aspiring?
You're putting me under pressure now. I would just say, if you're an aspiring barrister or if you're anyone listening to this, I hope you have a good evening or a good morning or a good afternoon, depending on what time you're listening. And thanks for having me, Reese. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Mass. Thank you to our listeners. We hope you enjoyed this segment of our Pupillage podcast series. If you've not already listened, you can find more discussions about pupillage at 7BR from our head of pupillage, Adam Weisman QC, junior tenants, Susanna Johnson, Emily Mitchell and Kitty Geddes, and our senior clerks, Paul Eel and Steve Wright. Join us next week for the conclusion of this series, where we'll be hearing from pupillage secretaries Caroline Lodi and Chris Canning. Until next week, thank you and goodbye.